Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering Lost Souls. Enjoy the episode.
Dear God, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come.
That was the demon coming out as I said the Lord's Prayer.
I'm going to have some background track for us.
Background there. Track for this whole episode?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. No. Oh my goodness. It's true. Okay, this is going to be perfect for this whole episode. That's right, folks. This week we're talking about a little movie called Lost Souls.
It's too good, isn't it?
Yes.
I almost need to
keep it going.
Yeah?
I want to keep it going. No, not that high. Just keep it at a low hum. I think it's kind of perfect.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for listening to our episode last week in Autumn in New York. We're picking up with Winona right now.
Yes.
Is that we talked about she's kind of in like the beginning of a slump period.
Yes.
Where she's lost a lot of power that she had as a creative force.
And people have lost their faith.
Yes. Hollywood has kind of lost interest in her as a leading lady.
Yeah.
And so she's kind of forced to take movies less because, she really feels a connection to the material and wants to do it, as more just kind of like, all right, well, this is interesting. I'll do this. She does this movie because she had never done a thriller before. And that's...
What?
What is going on? What is happening?
I have the full quote from her. She said she was attracted to Lost Souls because I know nothing about the subject. I personally don't believe in demonic possession. For me to play this woman was a real challenge. She is the ultimate believer. Most of all, I just wanted to do a movie in the thriller genre at least once. That's really the only quote we have from her.
And this is the movie she picked.
Yes.
Oh God, Winona.
Well. The reason we don't have any quotes from her about the making of this movie because she didn't do any press for this movie.
Yeah.
Because this movie gets delayed a lot for a reason that I want to loop back to in a minute.
Yeah.
But she doesn't do any press for this movie. Aside from the fact that on the release day of this movie is when she gets her Hollywood Walk of Fame star.
Yeah.
Which is kind of just like poor, like it kind of stinks that this is the movie that she gets the star with.
Yeah.
But she doesn't do any press because the movie gets delayed and her contractual obligation to do press is left. She's like, I'm not doing press for this movie.
Yeah.
This is a stinker.
Yeah.
Because this is a notorious stinker.
It's really bad.
Yeah, it's really not a great movie. I kind of think the first act of it is fine.
What?
To me, this movie, the first act is fine.
Are you okay?
The second act is disastrous.
You seem a little bit possessed right now.
I'm a little possessed. I was possessed by...
This movie is garbage from ass to ass. End to end, womb to tomb.
It's kind of fine.
It's horrible.
It's kind of fine in the beginning.
It's a terrible movie.
It's kind of fine in the beginning. It looks great.
I said the same thing about Pawn Shop Chronicles.
I did say the same thing about Pawn Shop Chronicles. The opening's kind of fine. It's funny. This movie kind of has a strong first act. And by strong, I mean like it has like a 6 out of 10 first act, and then it has like a 1 out of 10 second act, and then a 4 out of 10 third act.
A 4 out of 10 third act?
Yes.
Really?
I like the part in the church. Where he pops Philip Baker Hall. That's good.
Oh my God.
This movie is directed by Janusz Kaminski, who is Steven Spielberg's longtime cinematographer, starting with Schindler's List.
Yeah.
It's about 6 years after Schindler's List in this movie. He shot, in between that and this, he had shot, yada, 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 Schindler's List, How to Make an American Quilt. He did shoot. But then he basically only works with Spielberg for a run of Lost World, Amistad, Saving Private Ryan. He directs this movie in between Saving Private Ryan and AI. He's kind of like flexing his Spielberg connection to get some funds.
Yeah.
Weirdly, Spielberg doesn't have any connection to this movie. You would expect that he would ask Stevie to throw him a little executive producer credit. Maybe Stevie was like, this thing stinks to high heaven already. I'm not getting involved in this.
Yeah.
Movie inexplicably produced by Meg Ryan instead. Did you clock that?
No, I did not.
This movie was produced by Meg Ryan. Same one from Sleepless in Seattle.
Who wrote this movie?
This movie is written by Pierce Gardner, who does not have a Wikipedia page.
My God.
But yeah, it's weirdly produced by Meg Ryan, directed by Janusz Kaminski. And Winona gets connected to this because of the, like, her, I have free time and I want to do a thriller. Sure, I'll do this movie. It otherwise stars, besides Winona, Ben Chaplin, Philip Baker Hall, Elias Koteas, Sarah Winter, and John Hurt. It's kind of a good cast. It's a good lineup of people.
Yeah, it's pretty all right.
I like
cast,
Elias
yeah.
Koteas a lot. He's like a good, dependable supporting player.
Yeah.
Philip Baker Hall, always reliable. John Hurt, come on.
Come on.
There's another demonic possession movie out right now called The First Omen.
Yeah.
It's a prequel to the Omen movies.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, who's in this movie? And I saw that it stars Charles Dance, Bill Nighy, and Ralph Ineson, and I about, like, ripped my shirt off and started bouncing around like an orangutan. I want to see that movie.
Yeah.
There's really, besides that, there's not much context to it. Like, Winona doesn't really have much of interest going. The only thing that happens before this movie is, like, she starts dating Matt Damon for a little bit during and just dating him through production of this movie. We've lost, like we talked about in Alien Resurrection and Girl Interrupted, like the book that I've been reading, the Winona biography, is done. We don't have that to defer to anymore.
There will be a sequel soon.
I will say there's a telling line at the end of that book, which I want to loop back to, which is that Winona's basically like, after her like string of issues at that time, like movie wise, is the biographer of the book's like, as long as Winona's happy with her performance, that's all that matters. It's a mature performance for someone so young. All the more so since Winona works in an industry that appears to discourage such individuality. That's the biographer like speaking out, but it is kind of telling of being like,
as long as she's happy
with her performances,
that's all that really matters.
Because the movies themselves aren't quite matching up to what we've had prior.
No. You mentioned, you know, we'll look back to why this movie got delayed and how it ended
yes.
up lapsing Winona's contract for her obligations to promote this film. I want to start off with saying that, like, much like 1999 being like the dawn of CGI amazement, you know what it was also the dawn of? End of the world movies.
It was, I mean, Y2K was approaching.
Yeah.
We talked about this last week in Autumn in New York a little bit.
Yeah.
But the year 2000 was approaching, and there was just a lot of end of the world vibes going around.
Yeah.
It all comes to a confluence of, like, the Soviet Union falls in 91. America goes into this being the sole superpower in the world state for most of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you get a lot of those end of history movies where it's like, well, history is done, we've won, and now it's just like continued upward mobility. We're done with like crazy things happening, and then 9/11 obviously changes that.
Right.
But the world's kind of at a lapse. People are like, we've finished. We're good. Things must be coming to the end. It's where you get movies like The Matrix.
Yeah.
That are about like, well, this is the peak of our civilization. And then we just create robots and they'll wipe us out.
Well, it's also like from a very religious sense.
Yeah, the year 2000.
It's a new millennia.
Yeah.
And that carries a lot of like
significance. It's 2000 years after the supposed birth of Christ.
Yeah.
For Christianity, there's obviously a lot of like Y2K is a much more technological based thought of apocalypse.
Right. But on the sub side of that, there is like you just mentioned with Christianity, it's obviously not like a written down doctrine belief that the second coming will happen in the second millennia.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people, and I know this because like I have memories of this being talked about and even seen other movies around this time period that had the similar overtones of like, hey, it's the second millennia, 1999. We go into the year 2000. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? Were we ever supposed to make it to 2000? I even think there was like, people thought like the Mayan hieroglyphic said like 2012 was the end of the world. Yeah. But I think there are even some interpretations that said 2000. So there's a lot of end of the world stuff going on. And that's where I think like 1999 was where there were a lot of movies sort of showing that a little bit. So yeah. I'm just going to read a little bit of
End of Days and Stigmata are probably the two you're about to read.
Well, and so the movie was initially supposed to be released in October 1999. Its trailer was in theaters in summer 99. However, due to a flood of, quote, end of the world movies coming out at the same time, End of Days 99, Stigmata 99, etc., the decision was made to delay the release. Its new date was February 4th. However, it got moved after the popular Scream franchise staked out the date for Scream 3.
Yeah.
The final release date of October 13th, 2000 was finally decided upon, which also happened to be the same day as the re-release of The Exorcist. So, yeah, competing with a lot of end of the world movies, meaning this then would come out in 2000 when everybody is fine. The end of the world did not happen, and everyone is okay. It was all just a delusion.
Yeah.
Much like this movie is doing.
In 1999, there are four major movies that come out. It's Dogma, which is Kevin Smith. Have you seen Dogma, Stuart?
I've been meaning to watch it, but I've not seen it.
You would like Dogma.
I know I would.
That's a movie about two angels coming to Earth, and Jay and Silent Bob have to stop the end of the world. And Ben Affleck and Matt Damon play the fallen angels.
I like that.
But there's Dogma. There's End of Days, which is a Schwarzenegger end of the world movie. There's The Matrix, which is an end of the world movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Omega Code, which is an end of the world movie. And there's Stigmata, which is another similar, like, end of the world religious coming of the Antichrist kind of movie.
Yeah.
And this all comes to a confluence with the year 2000.
Yeah.
Because, like, of course it would.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That, like, I love a movie like this.
Yeah.
You tell me you're making a movie about how in the year 2000 the Antichrist could come, like, yeah, I'll buy a ticket to that. Sounds good. I'll go see it.
Yeah.
Don't believe in it, but I'll go see it.
Right.
But yeah, it is funny this movie gets pushed to October of 2000.
After we've
passed it and nothing happened.
Right.
It's like if they released the movie 2012 in 2014.
And so to that point, I just want to read the IMDb log line for this and the poster tagline.
Yes, the poster tagline is very funny knowing that.
The IMDb log line is a Catholic teacher, this is Winona, meets an atheist journalist, Ben Chaplin, whom a group of Catholics and priests believes has been chosen by the devil to be the Antichrist.
Yes.
That's the log line of this movie.
Yes.
The tagline on the poster, which it just shows, like, in the background, it's a deep, dark blood, crimson red shading with a pentagram. Lost souls at the bottom. Above lost souls, you see Winona Ryder, Ben Chaplin. At the very top of the poster, the text, they've had their 2,000 years. Now it's our turn.
Whoa.
It's funny because this movie comes out, like you mentioned, on the day of the re-release of The Exorcist.
Yes.
The famed 2000 re-release of The Exorcist that involves the spider walk down the stairs.
Possessions, demons, all that shit. Yeah.
But like the Exorcist re-release gets a lot of press because it adds scenes back into the movie that were cut for the theatrical.
Mm-hmm.
Like the spider walk that's famous.
Yeah.
But The Exorcist... And this movie starts in such like an Exorcist homage-y kind of way.
Absolutely.
I think we can just jump right into talking about it.
I think we can.
Because the movie starts with Maya Larkin, who's Winona's character.
Yeah.
Who's working with two priests and a guy named John, whose like connection to the church is like kind of loose.
Father LaRoe, played by John Hurt, Elias Codius, John Townsend, and Brian Reddy, who plays Father Frank. It's like, that's like the team. That's the insidious team.
Yes.
They go into this mental institution.
Yes.
Where they have to, I guess, perform an exorcist on a patient.
Yes.
Great. So they go into his room, and of course, like, the people in the mental institution's like, no, you shouldn't do this. I don't believe in what you guys are doing, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then they start doing their like little ceremony thing. And then it cuts to where this possessed mental patient is like writing down numbers.
He's writing numbers and he's kind of rambling. They start the exorcist. We don't get to see it.
We're
outside in the hall.
Yeah.
Where Alfre Woodard is playing like the psychiatrist.
Yeah.
And then you just start hearing like demonic.
Yeah.
Coming from inside of the room.
Yeah.
And she's like, let us in. And they're trying to rip the door open.
Yeah.
Eventually they get the door open.
Father Leroux is like down bad.
Yeah, he's down bad. He's knocked out. Winona's like crouched in a corner praying to a crucifix.
Yeah.
And the guy's in a coma. The supposed like possessed.
He's the possessed guy's in a coma.
Yes.
And so
the exorcism is unsuccessful ultimately. Winona like steals all of the notes.
Yeah.
Kind of sneaks out.
Yeah. She then looks at the notes and starts to try her best to like decrypt them.
Yes, because it's all just a series of numbers.
And she finds out that it's like it's a cipher. And if she cracks the cipher, which she does, it spells out a name.
Yes.
Which the
Peter Kelson.
Peter Kelson, who is the Ben Chaplin character.
Yeah. It's very nice of the devil to, in his possession, write out a cipher to be solved.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't you like that? Don't you like how he like gives out those little like little
He gives
treats?
Out these little clues.
He's like, here you go, guys.
First problem with this movie is that he does just like, because we learn through the concept of the movie that the guy who's going to become the Antichrist has been shaped for this his entire life. And so there's no reason for the devil to possess somebody right out of cipher that has to be solved. It's already known by his followers.
Yeah.
Right?
It should be.
Yeah.
If you believe in that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like the devil's just like, all right, here's some clues if you want to go figure it out.
Yeah.
It's like, Mr. Snowman, I gave you all the clues.
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Detective, I gave you all the clues.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Right.
But Peter Kelson, who we learn is a writer who researches serial killers and studies pathological narcissism and parapsychology to discredit like beliefs like this.
Yeah.
I at this point, I'm kind of into what the movie's doing right here. I like a movie like this normally. You give me a movie about like some priests and like the Antichrist is coming and they're going to go fight him. I'm into it. I'm like, yeah, sure. I'll slop up what you're serving. I'll eat what you're slopping.
The thing for me is like, I can watch movies like The Conjuring and The Exorcist and like have an okay time with them. But my issue is like, not only do I not believe in the things that are happening in these movies, but like what I really don't like and what I vehemently like disagree with is how that there are audience members who they'll attach their belief that they have to this movie.
Yeah.
And it's almost like at their own demise sometimes. Like,
yeah.
Have you ever met a person who like gets panic attacks watching possession movies?
I haven't met someone like that, but I know that they exist.
Yeah. I've met some folks like that where it's like they stay away from like demonic possession movies because they feel like it'll linger with me after.
That's why I love it, though.
That's why I hate it. I think it's so like unhealthy. But like, here's the thing. If the movie's done well, I mean, this is the most like basic answer anybody can give. If the movie's done well, then I'll like it. No bullshit. Yeah. No shit, right? But like, it has to be done like so well or else like I'm not going to be into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I've watched The Conjuring once and like I think it's a good movie. It's not like a rewatch every year movie for me, even though I think like objectively it's like known as one of the best horror movies.
Yeah.
Modern horror movies made. I just like, you know, all like the demonic possession stuff, like, and this is with the horror genre in general, that horror is so specific to what actually scares you and what doesn't that someone who is terrified of possession movies are not so much as scared of slasher movies.
Yeah.
But people who aren't scared of possession movies are terrified of slasher movies because slasher movies are real.
Yeah.
That's the thing that could actually happen to you.
Yeah. Michael Myers could show up.
Jason could show up.
Yeah.
Freddy Krueger?
Probably not.
Probably not. Right.
But like I look at these movies are fantasy. This is a fantasy movie.
Absolutely.
I just read Stephen King's book, Dance Macabre, about like his thoughts on the horror genre. And now to him, he's like, horror is ultimately all fantasy.
Yeah.
Horror writers will try and tell you that it's not a fantasy novel. It is a fantasy novel. When I write Salem's Lot, it is fantasy.
Yeah.
In the same way that Lord of the Rings is fantasy, my things are fantasy.
Yeah. Right.
And so I watch something like this and I'm like, I just, you know what? Give me a nice little Dan Brown-esque conspiracy involving the church. They're trying to bring about the Antichrist. There's some priests who are going to fight it. I'm all in. I'll take it.
Yeah.
I enjoy slop like The Pope's Exorcist, which is slop in the truest sense. That movie's funny because Russell Crowe is like massive on a little Vespa. He drives it from Rome to Spain, like hundreds of miles, and then yells at a pig, possess at a pig. That's why that movie's intro. I also want to shout out Screen Gems. Release Pope's Exorcist 2 and 3, you cowards. Russell Crowe gave some interview where he's like, I don't know if we're going to do them. They seem to not have much interest in the sequels. And I'm like, release the fucking sequels, you cowards.
Do it.
Pope's Exorcist 2 and 3. I beg of you. I will be there butt in seat opening night. I'm glad that we're keeping this music in the background.
Me too.
It's deeply beneficial. Yeah. Stuart, have you ever seen the movie Prince of Darkness?
I think
you would like the movie Prince of Darkness. Yeah. That is a John Carpenter movie.
Yeah.
It's a movie about like an old priest dies in a church in like somewhere in Texas, and some priests and scientists show up, and in the basement they find a vial of green goo, and they realize that the green goo is the Antichrist.
What?
That, and it's such a movie about like finding a it's like a scientific explanation for religious beliefs, and it's like, yeah, well, if God is pure energy and matter, then the Antichrist would be like
antimatter,
and this is a vial of antimatter, and this is Satan in the jar. It is such an insane movie. You would actually really like it. I'm dead ass.
Prince of Darkness.
Yes.
Interesting.
I will not tell you anything else about the movie, but that is the concept of it. And like, there's all these like beasts that keep coming and circling the church, and it's great.
Oh, 1987.
Yes, it is a truly great movie. Capital G.
Wow. Donald Pleasance.
Yes.
Is in it. Have you seen the documentary The Sons of Sam?
No.
It's about, obviously, the serial killer David Berkowitz, Son of Sam killer. But it's mostly about the journalist who does a shit ton of research on him, because his whole bit is that he's convinced that the Son of Sam and Charles Manson are all part of this like satanic death cult.
Yeah.
And he spends like his entire life trying his best to prove it, to the point where he actually gets interviews with David Berkowitz.
Yeah.
And he pushes on to him, like, were you ever involved in like satanic cults?
Yeah.
And the killer is just like, I mean, maybe, but not really.
Yeah.
And the whole point of the documentary, which like when he dies, which obviously he does in real life, you know, everyone about in this documentary is like pro journalist. Like, it's like, you know, he did everything he could to prove this like big conspiracy that they're trying to preserve this secret of like the satanic cult that's showing all these serial killers. And
yeah,
I'm watching this and I'm like, no, that dude's a fucking kook.
Yeah.
And like, people, as much as they would like to try to like push on like evils that are spawned from religious evil, like Satan and all that stuff, we'll find that there are usually simpler answers.
Yes. It's what's it called? The
Occam's Razor.
Occam's Razor. Easy answer is usually the correct one.
Which is what brings me back to this movie, is that here you have Ben Chaplin plays Peter Townsend, who is described in the logline of this movie as an atheist journalist. Now,
yes, he likes to discredit religious like phenomena.
And there's a lot of movies in the early 2000s.
He likes to discredit Jesus in your toast.
Yes. And there's a lot of movies that have this kind of little edge to it of like the atheist and the religious person are together.
Yeah.
Contact. The Reaping.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's like plenty of other movies I could list off, but it's all around like the early 2000s where it's like, let's put like an atheist and a religious person together and see how they talk.
See how it goes.
And in the early 2000s, obviously, you were still living in very like, I mean, we still are today, but even back then, culturally wise, you couldn't end the movie with the atheist being the winner of the argument.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Matthew McConaughey is the winner of the argument in Contact.
Yeah. But also, it's not really that interesting if the atheist wins, film-wise.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be, but like, that's my problem. Yeah. It's like they don't put any effort into why it's interesting. That's why I think movies like... That's why I like Mother's so interesting to me and why I love Mother, because the movie is such a metaphorical allegory for, like, this is what it would be like if religion was real.
Yeah.
And what we're really, like, worshiping.
Yeah.
You realize that?
Yeah.
Like, if this is the house we're living in, the religious house, this is what goes on inside the house.
Yes.
And that's why I love
that. Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
But here's my thing about this movie.
Yeah.
This movie's not interesting if you wins.
It's not interesting.
And any movie that has to involve, like, demonic possession... If he's like, yeah, this guy's just crazy, and they're like, yeah, you're right. Like, there's probably an interesting way you could make that movie where, like, he's right in the end, and they shoot him anyway because they think he's the Antichrist, and that's, like, that's a different movie.
Well, I always think, like, the interesting way to end this movie is they kill him, but he's not the Antichrist.
Yeah, because there's, like, no Antichrist.
Because there is no Antichrist.
Yeah.
It never was a thing.
That's an interesting approach for a movie.
That is. But this movie would have you believe, like, she did it, she killed him, yay.
But for that to happen, it has to be a very different movie.
It has to be a very different movie.
Because then you can't have any actual, like...
demonic shit going
stuff
on.
Going on.
Right.
Which,
when you really think about it, nothing actually that...
There's the guy who's floating, and there's, like, the door that goes...
When does that happen? I don't remember. I checked out a lot when I watched this movie. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Ben, do we want to talk about Ben Chaplin?
Let's talk about Ben Chaplin.
Yeah.
He's a dude.
Also, it's really funny. This movie has two credited editors, and one of them has a, like, parentheses around this recut.
Nice.
Because they took the movie away from me, because it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
But Ben Chaplin's, like, an atheist guy, and he likes to... journalist, and he likes to discredit religious phenomena.
Yeah.
He's having a family dinner with his uncle and other family members. His uncle's played by Philip Baker Hall.
Yeah.
He's like, I've been having a crazy dream recently where XES is written. I'm reading a book and XES is on the cover. And they're like, oh, it just says sex backwards. I've had those dreams too, buddy. And they're all laughing around.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like, in the church, the undisclosed church that the characters are all in, they're like, XES,
it's some demonic satanic thing, right?
It's like 22 plus 5 plus 6.
Which is 666.
Yeah, it equals out to 33.
Oh.
The 33rd birthday of the characters when he'll become the Antichrist.
Whatever.
Because Jesus was 33 when he died, so the Antichrist will be born at 33. That's like the idea within the movie, which is fun lore. Go for it. Go off, Queen.
Cool. That's so cool.
Go off, Queen. So Maya, like, puts together, like, okay, this guy, Peter Kelsen, on his 33rd birthday will turn into the Antichrist.
And she tells her whole team about it.
Yeah, and she tells her whole team.
The biggest fucking mistake she could have ever done, because these are all fanatics.
Yeah. And her main dude, John Townsend, played by Elias Koteas, is like, I'm taking matters in my own hands.
I'm gonna go shoot him.
Yeah, goes to, like, an event that Ben Chaplin's at, tries to shoot him.
Misses,
but someone grabs him and snaps his neck, and Elias is out of the movie.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Maya tries the more, you know, calm approach, and goes to his office.
And tries to prove that religion is real.
And just is like, what if I could... The Catholic Church has certified their first demonic possession in, like, 50 years or something. Isn't that interesting to you? Don't you want to try and discredit it? Isn't that, like, cool to you? And he's like, yeah, sure. Take me to meet the guy tomorrow. He's just kind of interested in sleeping with her, is the subtext of the movie. But the thing about this movie is that Janusz Kaminski is a incredible DP. One of the best. I love how his movies look. I love how this movie looks. I'm going to say it. This movie looks really good.
This movie does not look really good.
This movie has a lovely bleach bypass, low contrast, or high contrast.
High contrast, desaturated,
yes.
Ugly look.
It looks like Minority Report, but if it was crazier.
Like, I don't deny that if there is an intentional way to make a movie ugly and that how it works to the theme of the story, then fine. But call it beautiful because of that.
No, there's this shot where it's Ben Chaplin and his fiance walking into a church, and the screen is just like, there's one light behind the door to the church blasting in this radiant golden light, nothing else, It is striking. Like, parts of the screen are just fully black, except for, like, these pews that are all backlit and this golden hue that's just blasting around. It's gorgeous.
And you know what? I was probably asleep during that. Because the movie sucks.
But Janusz, you know, for all his visual sensibilities, he doesn't have, like, a director's sense.
Yeah.
The blocking in this movie is very basic. There's not much in the way of, like, strong, like, interesting acting choices. It's edited really weird. He just does a lot of cutaway shots. He doesn't have the touch of a director.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of telling when you watch this movie. Like, he's a great DP, but he doesn't have the director's sensibility. And it's no disrespect to him, but
it's a little
you don't have it, buddy. Sorry. Yeah.
It's a little disrespect to him. But.
Because you this movie really struggles to do anything interesting. And I'm kind of just, like, into this first act only because of vibes. Like, the vibe is fun. Like, I'm like, okay, there's a conspiracy and there's some demons involved. It looks nice. The pace is off. And I don't really care about these people, but sure, I'm into the vibe here. I'm like, tell me more about this conspiracy. Let me get into it. But I don't understand how this, like, small sect of people who work at a church are, like, the chosen demon hunters. Because it seemingly is just John Hurt, Winona Ryder, and Elias Koteas as, like, a little team.
Yeah.
And it's never quite elaborated upon how that what their purpose is or how they got there.
Maybe they are the Pope's exorcist.
Yeah, it's like a dead ass. If this movie just had a line where it's like, yeah, John Hurt's the Pope's chosen exorcist or something.
That would make sense.
It solves a problem already.
Yeah.
And, like, they're shown to be, like, kind of heretics within the church. Like, most people don't believe them.
Well, that's kind of where my brain went to, is that they are the fanatics of the church.
Yes, they're the fanatics. But the movie doesn't put any effort into
explaining their fanaticism.
Yeah, there's one part where, like, she presents, like, her theory on the birth of the Antichrist, and the priests are like, yeah, we don't believe that. And that's it.
And that's it. Yeah, there's not that. But that should have been, like, half the movie right there.
Yes, that should be, like, there should be a lot more conflict within the church.
Yeah.
Of her. Trying to prove this.
That's the whole conflict of the omen.
Yes.
It's like figuring out, it's like, are we just being fanatics or are we actually real in this?
Yeah, is our baby the Antichrist?
Right.
Is Damien the kid?
Yeah, that's the entire conflict of the movie.
Yes.
Not this movie, though.
Yeah, this movie takes a very disinteresting approach. Because Maya, she goes to Peter Kelson and is like, all right, let's come meet this guy. And she goes to meet the
mental patient.
Yeah, the mental patient whose name is,
I don't know, but he's in a coma.
I think it's like Henry Birdson or something.
Something like that.
But she takes him to meet the he's a serial killer prior to his possession by the devil.
Oh, but couldn't he have been possessed by the devil to commit all those killings?
Yes. I think that is the idea of the movie.
So, like, here's the this has been a real thing of people who have claimed insanity based on, like, they said, I committed my crime because I was possessed.
Yes. It's happened.
It's happened. But, like, where do those cases tend to end up?
They mostly end up with, like, this person is
insane, they faking it?
They're fake. They're either insane or they're like, regardless, they aren't possessed by the devil.
Right.
Is the result of it.
But the question I'm asking is, what do the rulings usually favor? That, no, you're faking it, you're guilty, or
You're insane.
You're insane.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know what the court rulings favor.
I believe it's normally insanity.
It's that they go for the not guilty based on insanity?
Yeah. Or not guilty based on insanity, or just that can't get the death penalty.
Yeah. It's weird that, like, the insanity plea still means you do go to, like, a institution.
Yes, you go somewhere, but you don't get executed or spend life in prison.
Yeah.
But for the purpose of a movie, I'm always willing to go with, it's more fun if you say the guy's possessed by the devil.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, like, go into the movie and it's like, yeah, he's just, like, kind of crazy. And they're like, okay, cool. And then they go to dinner and, you know, Winona and Ben Chaplin, they get together and they have some kids and, you know, they go to church on Sundays still, but she's kind of, like, separating from the, like, that's not an interesting rest of this movie.
I don't know. I kind of think that's interesting.
I'm like, they go to this place and he's like, this guy's in a coma. And then Winona looks at him and he opens his eyes and looks at her and she's like, no, he's real.
He's still there.
And Ben Chaplin's like, you crazy girl. I don't want to hear any more about this.
And she starts having hallucinations.
Yes, she starts having visions of like the serial killer attacking her in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And of other serial killers like showing up, and she's like, ah,
the devil sending possessed serial killers after me.
Yes.
Cool.
And so I'm struggling to remember exactly how she proves it to him.
I don't know how either, bro.
Because it is like really poorly directed, and this is where the movie loses me.
I won't say I fell asleep, but I was definitely checked out.
Yes.
Most of this movie. I don't remember.
There's a really funny scene. Sorry. Where Winona gets like scared by a little girl. Do you remember this part?
No.
Winona's like in a New York City diner, and like this little girl comes up behind her and is like, you need to put the napkin on your lap. And her mom's like, oh, she's just really into the rules. And then the little girl's just like, you can't stop us. And she's like, what? And then like Winona starts like grabbing her head and like, oh my God. And then there's like this shot of this guy next to her. Like, it's the funniest attempt at a jump scare scene I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I was howling in my living room at how funny this scene is.
Yeah.
Impossible to take seriously.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm like, this is the 1 out of 10 part of the movie for me. It's so bad.
It's really bad.
The vibes that I was in the first half, gone.
Because what happens? I don't remember.
Some random dude shows up to Ben Chaplin's office and is just like, yeah, you're the devil. I don't know where this guy comes from. I don't know his connection. But Ben Chaplin's like, leave my office. And the guy's like, you're the devil. Sorry to tell you. And he walks out. We never see this guy again.
Yeah.
Don't know how he's connected to any of this. But Ben Chaplin's now kind of like spooked, so he like reconnects with Winona.
This guy's just a guy.
Yeah.
He's just a dude.
And so he reconnects with Winona and is like, okay, what other proof do you have? And she's like, okay, you're an A positive blood type, right? And he's like, yeah, your dad's an O positive. And he's like, yeah. And she's like, it's impossible to be an A positive if your dad's O positive. They say the devil, the Antichrist, will be child born of incest. Your uncle's a priest. He baptized you. You're the only person he ever baptized. And he's like, what? And she's like, here's the proof. And she slaps it all down.
Wait, so like, is his uncle his real dad? Like,
yes. He's a child born of incest who was baptized by a fake priest. So he technically was never baptized.
Oh my God. I don't remember any.
And so he's like, oh shit. And so he's like, I need the proof. So they go to this, the hospital that he was born in, to find like the records where they're attacked by the serial killer who's floating up and down the halls. This is such a funny sequence. He's like, like they put a camera on his shoulder at one point and he's like, just like zooting down at max speed.
Yeah.
It looks like at this point, even the visual style isn't quite working. Cause it just like, it kind of looks like the first Saw.
Yeah.
But Janusz can't really like grab that, so all like the lovely composed like high contrast that I love about the first act of this movie is kind of gone at this point. I'm just like, all right, whatever. By the end, I do think the movie looks good again, but in this point I'm just like, all right, get through this scene, let's go.
Yeah,
they're good. And the guy like slashes Winona and she's like, ah, I've been hit. And then he points the gun at the knife at Ben Chaplin and she's like, he can't stab you, you're the Antichrist. And he's like, ah! And he grabs a chair and like hits the guy with it.
Yeah, I do remember that. Remember that part. Yeah.
Yeah,
he kills him, right?
Yeah, he kills him. They're like, good thing we fought off that possessed serial killer, let's go back to my apartment. And Winona's like, she's like, they probably put a pentagram by your bed, you should figure out where that's at.
And he can't find it, except he looks above his bed in ceiling.
It's not above his bed. So first, earlier in the movie, Winona gives him a tape of The Exorcist from the beginning and is like, you should listen to this. And he tries to play it. And he's like, yeah, it's just a low hum. But his next door neighbor is like, stop, because we come to her room and she's hearing
all the demonic voices
at max volume.
Could have been a really good scene. That could have been a really good scene.
Love this scene because it's so funny that she's like, oh my God. It's like your neighbor when you're blasting like some music and they're like, turn it down. Except she's like, just here going, like, it turns out she killed herself.
Yeah.
Around the same time, his Ben Chaplin's fiance comes home and it's just like, yeah, I was downstairs getting the mail from Mr. Kowalski's room. He keeps getting sent there for some reason. At this point near the end, Ben Chaplin's like looking around his room for a pentagram. Can't find it anywhere. He knocks over a picture of his fiance and in the back he finds two keys taped there. And he has like a flashback to his girlfriend or his fiance saying, yeah, I went down to Mr. Kowalski's room. He got his mail again. He's like, wait a second. So he goes down to the floor below. The key unlocks the door. The dark room. You expect something's going to happen. Nothing happens. Because that's this movie. There's the one scene in the hospital where something actually happens. And the serial killer attacks them. And they kill him. And that's it. That's the last time anything happens. This movie's deathly dull at this point. Because you keep being like, is there a scare coming? So a little scene, something. Nope. Okay.
He goes into one of the bedrooms.
He goes into the bedroom directly below his, and there's a pen, and he pops open like the
ceiling tile.
Yeah, and there's just a pentagram drawn there. And he's like, "Yep, that would do it.
That's the pentagram. That's like, the one she
my
was
fiance's
talking.
In on it. Damn, that sucks." And so he goes back upstairs.
It's like they're trying to paint in a little bit of Rosemary's Baby into it a little bit, but like not enough.
I like the con. Like, there was another movie that I was thinking of during this. It's, I think, Sleepy Hollow, where he finds, like, the pentagram drawn below the carpet in his room. The Tim Burton Sleepy Hollow. Doesn't he find, like, the pentagram below the carpet in his room?
I don't think so. I think that's a different movie.
I like movies like scenes like this, Rosemary's like Baby, Hereditary. Everyone's in on a conspiracy.
Yeah, I do too.
And it's just like, they're finding pentagrams in their room and they're like, oh my God, from the beginning, I've been chosen for this like nightmare. Yeah. The music is really doing it for me.
Yeah.
I hope the listener driving to McDonald's right now is enjoying this. what if we have accidentally unlocked possession and people are possessing the car?
Cars just start crashing.
But he's like, yep, my fiance's in on it. And so he goes upstairs and she's already up there talking with Winona. She came home and found Winona Ryder in her bedroom and is like, oh, I loved you and Heathers. and they're like, yeah, same girl. she comes up.
All right.
And Michelle's like, where's this key go to? And she's like, I don't know. It's the spare. And he's like, I found it behind the picture of you. And she's like, crazy. And she pulls a gun out of a drawer and points it at Winona. Is like, I'm a shooter. And he's like, no, you won't. And she's like, I will. And then while she's distracted, Winona grabs her, takes the gun, and shoots her. And his fiance is dead.
I don't remember that.
Sent to hell.
I don't remember
it's
that.
It's a really funny
all.
Death. Because like they both fall to the ground, and it's like the gun just like kind of.
What is going on?
It's like, I'm demonstrating for Stuart physically, but like they have hold of each other. This is like Winona grabs her, holds her like this. And it's like almost accidentally that she gets shot.
Hmm.
We don't dwell on this at all. Because Winona's just like, time to go meet your dad. We cut to them pulling up outside of a church.
Oh, right. And they go inside the church.
Yeah, they go in through the back door and arrive on the pulpit. Normal thing to do.
Yeah.
Where they find like a whole congregation of Satan worshipers just waiting for them. I like this scene. This scene's good.
It's
good is like a relative term.
It's not good.
I wrote ostensibly a horror movie. It's like, it's a horror movie on a technicality. Cool ending in church.
Cause everybody's there and they're like, yes.
And it's like the little girl and all these people who've been in the visions are all there.
You have been chosen to be the Antichrist. And they're like, you must kill her, Winona. And he's like, No, I don't want to be this.
I just skipped a big scene. They go to visit John Hurt, who like it turns out to be possessed by the devil, and they exorcise him and he dies, and he's the one who tells them to go see the uncle. So we're back in the church. Stuart's like weeping. He's so upset.
I just don't like this movie.
Yeah. But they're in this church, and Ben Chaplin has the gun, and he's pointing it at his uncle. And Winona's like, don't shoot him. That means you're accepting evil.
Yeah.
And thereby, like, accepting the devil or becoming the Antichrist. And as long as, like, it would be the greatest sacrifice I ever made. And then he shoots him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you fucking idiot.
And like,
you fucking idiot.
At this point, you think
this
is at the
end of Avengers, the Infinity War, the bad one, where Peter Quill, the one bad Avengers movie, the other three are good.
Yeah.
where that's a hot take I'm throwing out right now.
Age of Ultron, huh?
Age of Ultron, good.
I don't hate it.
Where Peter Quill like punches Thanos and it ends the world.
Yeah.
Because he's so upset that he killed his girlfriend.
I mean, you and a billion other viewers feel the same way.
Like, I mean, like, I get the point of the movie is that, like, it's a strong idea of, like, a personal vendetta resulting in the end of the world.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea. This movie, he does the same thing, except it never really set up. So it's just like, why'd you pop Philip Baker Hall? I was liking what he was cooking with in this movie, man.
Well, but what happens next is you expect then, like, okay, he did the thing, right?
Yeah.
He did the bad thing, which means he should, at this point now, be, like, turning into the devil.
No, because of the church, they found out he was born at 4:55 p.m. So at 4:55 on his 33rd birthday, which I think is supposed to be, like, which is supposed to be, like, the year 2000. I don't think they say, but it's like supposed to be around his birthday. Philip Baker Hall, before he dies, says they had their 2,000 years. We'll have ours.
Yeah.
Like it's time for the devil to rule for 2,000 years. And then in the year 4,000, we're going to switch back. You know, it's just an endless cycle. It'll be great.
I fucking hate
He shoots some people and then they take off in their car. And he's like, oh, my God, we have 20 minutes before I become the devil. They park their car under a bridge. And it's like 4:53 and he gives Winona the gun. He's like, shoot me. And she like, has the gun pointed at him and she's like, oh my God. And then 4:55 hits and he opens his eyes. And he's like, I'm not the Antichrist. It didn't happen. She still has the gun pointed at him. And then she looks at the clock 4:55, which turns into 6:66. And she's like, and he's like, fuck. And she shoots him. Right,
well, he has a slight change of demeanor.
Yeah, he seems very calm about it.
His eyes turn blackish, and he starts to do like a maniacal smile, and then she shoots him.
Yes.
It's like for a millisecond.
It's like, yeah, it's like a half second of that appearance.
That part I remember.
Yes.
I remember the beginning, and I remember
it's a little goofy.
It's a little goofy.
But she shoots him, and then she walks off, and the movie ends.
The movie That's literally the end of the movie. Over. Yeah. So
yeah, bad movie,
terrible movie,
bad not
terrible movie.
It's a very it's a very bad movie.
I give it a one.
It's like a four.
And to no, that's so wrong.
The first act I kind of like.
I give it a one.
It has.
I give it a one.
This is a 2 out of 10 movie that has a 4 out of 10 first act, and then a like 7 out of 10 visual style to it.
I don't remember.
And that all evens out to about a 4 for me.
I don't remember what I gave Celebrity. I know I was very hard on Celebrity.
Yes.
I think I gave that one maybe a 2 or a 3, but this one I definitely give a 1. Don't watch this movie. Do not watch this movie, folks. It will be a complete waste of your time. Just stay as far away from this movie as you can.
Yes.
And you should only watch it if you, I don't know, if you're sad.
If you're really into, like, demonic possession movies, it's probably one you can check off your box. But that's it. There's not much else to it. Check off your list.
Chekhov's gun to my head.
Chekhov's gun to my head. But what's interesting about this movie's release is that because it gets pushed a year, like, it loses all, like, the juice that it had from being a late 1999.
Because it was being marketed in 99.
Yeah. It was marketed for, like, a full year.
Yeah.
As being, like, the apocalypse is coming, 2000's gonna be it, and then 2000 hits, nothing happens. And they're like, okay, now watch the movie about the apocalypse that didn't happen. It's not interesting. It lost its zeitgeist moment.
Yeah.
Not that it would have had one, because it's bad anyway.
Yeah.
And, like, The Exorcist re-release, and I think makes more money than it in its opening weekend, if I'm right.
Wow.
Here, I'm opening up domestic weekend. That's his opening weekend. Okay, no, I'm wrong. But here's the opening weekend of the movie that released. Number one is Meet the Parents in its second weekend. Number two is Remember the Titans in its third weekend. Then Lost Souls, which opens at 3. The Exorcist is opening at 6 in its re-release on its fourth weekend. This is its big weekend, though. This is like the wide release one. It's like kind of sprinkled out before that.
Okay.
And so The Exorcist is dominating all the horror conversation at the time. Because people are like, go see The Exorcist again with new scenes added.
Yeah.
So this just comes out, makes $7 million its opening weekend. Ultimately goes $31 million against a $50 budget. Huge flop. Also a critical flop. Has an eight,
you think?
It has an 8% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Eight? Generous. Well,
With the consensus stating, though Kominsky's film is visually stylish, Lost Souls is just another derivative entry in the apocalypse genre with lackluster direction, unengaging characters, and no scares. Pretty accurate. Most reviews do agree with me that it is quite a good-looking movie. That just sucks.
I don't even think it looks good,
The New York
good,
Times,
though.
There are some particularly fine visual details. It's
I
the
don't
central story
care.
That's lacking.
I don't care. I just, I can't.
The Chicago Reader dismissed the film as visually striking set pieces set loose in a void, which I think is a great way to describe this movie. The Philadelphia Inquirer, despite its spooky, color desaturated visuals, guffaws, not screams, are more in order. That's good. Even a badly executed horror movie can achieve cheesy greatness. This one, unfortunately, is too somber for that. It's artfully shot, but with everything bathed in green and golden light. The set designers should be commended for their fine choice in lamps. They're fabulous, even at pre-scores. When the furniture stands out more than the story, the film's a stinker. Roger Ebert, Lost Souls possesses the art and craft of a good movie, but not the story. For a thriller about demonic possession and the birth of the Antichrist, it's curiously flat. All through the movie, I found myself thinking about how well it was photographed. Not a good sign. A bad sign, in fact. Weirdly, it just got released on Blu-ray last September.
Wow.
Finally.
Weird.
By Scream Factory.
Hmm.
But it's a flop. It's also one of the few movies we've covered that has a F cinema score. That's right, Stuart. We're talking about another F cinema score.
We cover a lot on this show.
It's one of the four movies that gets an F cinema score in the year 2000. One of them we've already talked about on this show.
Battlefield Earth.
No. Wait, where'd it go?
Really?
Oh, I'm looking at the A plus cinema scores. That's right. There we go. Lost Souls and Lucky Numbers. Battlefield Earth does not get an F cinema score, hilariously.
What
but
did
Lucky
get?
Numbers does. Remember Lucky Numbers?
Yes. I also hated
a movie
that.
Much better than this.
I also hated Lucky Numbers with a passion. All right. Are we done?
I think we're done.
Are we done? Get me out of here.
Yeah, I think we're done.
I'm so over
I do like
this
movie ends with Winona popping Satan between the eyes.
Yes.
But ultimately, just a flop and just another disappointment for Winona.
Yeah.
The run of this and Lost Souls, you've already changed the recorded color to green for this movie. Did you want to be done so bad?
You were the one who said before we started recording that I have to pee. I'm not going to pee so we could speed through. We have been at this for almost an hour, Jeff
Sweeney.
Yeah,
we're about to be done. Just watch this.
Take me home.
Thank you for listening to this episode on Lost Souls. Ultimately, we didn't like this movie, and we're just kind of in a rut period. But we get a little bit of a respite next week because Winona has a cameo.
We never talked about Winona's performance.
Oh, we never did we? I think that kind of says everything you need to know, right? She's fine. She clearly isn't that interested in this.
How many chances are we going to give Winona before we have to just start being honest? She's not good in this movie.
She's not very good. She's okay. Not. No, I just said she's like, she didn't. Okay. She clearly didn't
like,
really care.
Yeah. Okay. I get that she didn't really care. I understand that. Then I would say, why did you take this fucking movie in the first place? Which I understood.
Yeah.
I heard her own words why she took this movie.
Yes.
But at the same point, it's like, why did you take this fucking movie? No, she's not.
She didn't want to do press for this. She clearly didn't have much faith in it. Yeah. This
anyway.
Is kind of a, I'd say this is a clear cut paycheck gig for her.
Yeah. And it's
probably the first one we talked about that's just a paycheck.
This is a big stain for her, for me personally. Like if I have to think like back on all the movies we covered before, this takes the cake as being one of her worst.
She's not good in this. This is maybe her worst performance.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing on the page for the character.
Yeah.
And there's nothing she's bringing to it.
Yeah.
Amen. Some of the bad movies we covered, she's usually been like at least like putting in the baseline something. Level of work.
Yeah, like Alien Resurrection, she does something with yes. the role.
And she's not like, I wouldn't say she's terrible in this, but she's not great. She's like clearly kind of checked out, cashing the check.
I just like whenever she like talks in her like Catholic religious school teacher way, I'm always rolling my eyes at it because I don't believe her.
Yes.
I don't believe that when.
And she said, I don't believe in any of this stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it translates. Yes. Anyway.
But next week we're talking about a little cameo she makes in a movie called Zoolander. Just as far to the left as we can possibly take from this movie.
Yeah.
We'll be joined by recurring guest Sam Kelly to talk about Zoolander next week.
Fantastic.
We hope you enjoyed that episode. But we hope you enjoyed this episode, too. And if you did, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we're available on Spotify, Podcast, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. If you did not enjoy this episode, please type in above the title. Go to their page on Apple Podcasts and give them a negative review for us about how much you dislike Travolting. Find us at Travolting Pod on Twitter or Instagram, TravoltingPodcast@gmail.com, r/Travolting on Reddit, at Jeff W. Sweet on Twitter for me. Special thanks as always to Rebecca for our graphic design and Michael Van Bodegem Smith for the theme music that is now taking you out. See you next week for Zoolander.
Blue Steel.
What is this, a podcast for ants?